there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Let's go!
This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Lombardi Line, as we welcome you in on a Sunday. What's happening, Cooge? We say
Cooge.
I don't think
he
I'm
playing hoops last night. Coops was playing hoops last night. His latest post was he's got sore hamstrings, and after he worked out, he drank Diet Coke. Now he's going to pull that hamstring with that much Diet Coke in his
that's
body.
That's a DC. He calls it a DC.
That's a DC. Yeah. Hey, Patrick. Yes. Ben Simmons is coming to the rescue. He's coming to the rescue. He is coming to the rescue. Even though they lost last night, he'll be back to play in game four. I'm so excited.
I like the fact that you guys shop at the same stores, because if you've noticed the outfits, Mike, he looked like a Skittle yesterday.
What's his closet look like? Can you give any idea like what his closet could look like?
A rainbow.
Oh, my God.
A Laffy Taffy. He looked ridiculous, but at least he'll be here tomorrow to save the day, because no team's ever come back from down 0-3, so he's coming back just in time to save the Nets.
He changes in a phone booth like Clark Kent used to do, and then flies in.
I do.
Wow.
I do. Well, good morning. This is the Lombardi Line. He's Michael Lombardi, of course. I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I was just cracking up because we've kind of started with the evolution of the draft. This was, I'm sure you've seen the video a million times. It was Mel Kiper Jr. getting ripped by Bill Tobin. Can you walk us through, I think it was because of Dilfer. Walk us through your remembrance of that. And did you know Bill Tobin and kind of the vibe there?
No, Bill really well. Bill was a great role model for me. I used to run into him on the road. You know, there's certain times where as a young scout, you run into these older guys and they were so gracious to you. And Bill's one of the guys that was, and you know, he just got fed up with, you know, it's one thing, and I think ultimately we all do this, so I'm not criticizing Mel. It's one thing for you to give an opinion, but it's an opinion. It doesn't necessarily mean it's fact. And, you know, for Bill Tobin, who worked his way up through the ranks of the Chicago Bears, working for Papa Bear Hallis, you know, understanding what it takes to be a football player, being around some really good players, to then be attacked by somebody who's really never been in the arena before, who's never judged. I mean, the one thing about the draft Knicks, nobody goes back and looks at what they said, not about where they predicted the player to go, about what the player was supposed to do. I mean, and I think ultimately, yeah, I can remember being in the draft room. I think I was in Cleveland, and in Cleveland we had televisions in the draft room, shockingly. And he just went off on them and ripped them. And so, you know, I think he spoke for a lot of people that felt frustrated as television was entering into the draft. The unfounded criticism before the player played. Right, it's one thing if you pick Barkavius Mingo and he stinks. Criticize me all you want, no problem. I got that. I'm good on that. But before the pick, you start criticizing the guy because you picked him two spots earlier than he should have gone based on Mel's board. That's a little messed up.
Yeah, it was. The Colts had passed on Trent Dilfer twice in the top 10. So Mel Kiper went off. Bill Tobin's quote was, "Who the hell is Mel Kiper anyway?"
Yeah. I mean, and frankly, was Bill wrong? I know he won a Super Bowl for the Ravens, but he wasn't the reason. I mean, you know, when I hear Trent Dilfer, you know what I think of? I think of 3rd and 19. They're backed up. We've got them situated, and they throw a slant to Shannon Sharp, and Marquez Pope and Dorsett both miss the tackles, and the guy takes it 88 yards for a touchdown. That's what I think of Trent Dilfer when I was at the
I think of the Pontiac Silverdome. He was a Buccaneer. Dungy was coaching, and he was a terrible quarterback. That's what I was sitting there at the Pontiac Silverdome with my drunk friends. Anyway, the reason I
wrote about the Pontiac Silverdome yesterday.
You were writing about the Silverdome?
Well, I mean, I was writing up Barry Sanders, and I wanted to make the point that it didn't matter whether he played at the Pontiac Silverdome or Soldier Field. The surface was the same. You know, I mean, he's such a fascinating guy, Barry Sanders.
He's the best.
And I started this out, which I thought was really kind of interesting, was Barry Sanders never really wanted to play football. It wasn't until he was in the fourth grade that his sister bought him for Christmas one of those electronic games, you know, those electronic football games made by the Tudor Company.
Yep.
And so he got that for Christmas, and he started watching them, and they moved around, and he said, you know, I identify with the running back position. And then it took off. But it gets so more interesting. That's poor grammar. I'm apologizing. It gets interesting because when he goes to high school at Wichita North, he doesn't play. They don't start him. They don't start him. And it's not until the last 7 games of his high school career that he actually takes over. And Oklahoma State was one of the only big schools recruiting him. Tulsa was recruiting him. And that was really basically it. Tulsa and Iowa State, the only 2 schools. And so what happens is, this is classic college recruiting. The Oklahoma State guys, they're going to recruit somebody else at Wichita North. They see Sanders on this tape, and they say, you know what? We're taking all this tape with us back to Stillwater so no one else can see it. And that's how they get
Look up his numbers at Oklahoma State. They're unbelievable. And by the way, as a transcendent player, I must tell you, Michael, because that was my guy growing up, obviously, Barry Sanders had this ability, whether it was the stoners, the jocks, men, women, dogs, cats, everybody during that era, during those 10 years, were Lions fans because they were Barry Sanders fans. And then as soon as Barry retired, they went away. That's how special and transcendent he was. And by the way, his dad was obsessed with Jim Brown. So Barry Sanders rushes for 2,000 yards, and his dad gives an interview to the Detroit Free Press. And the first thing he says is, he's no Jim Brown. I mean, because he idolized Barry Sanders, maybe the most electrifying player in the history of any sport. His dad immediately says, well, he's no Jim Brown. And that was his first quote to the paper. I mean, talk about pressure.
He had pressure. I mean, he comes from a family of 11. The dad was a roofer, you know, and the kids had to work really hard within the family. And the dad was, you know, never thought his son was a football player. So, you know, so what happens is after he gets this Tudor game, which, by the way, in 1967, the NFL, they joined forces with this company and they sold more games. They sold over 40 million of those electronic games and made more money for NFL properties than any other game until we got to the Madden era. But so after playing that game, he signs up for the Red Barons of the Wichita League. And by signing up for the Red Barons, they put him on the field. The dad, fitting into what you're saying, the dad says, you know, I don't really want to go watch him play. He can't play football. I'm going to watch my 2 other sons. He had 3 sons and a lot of girls. So he goes and watches the 2 sons play in another game on another field. And his daughter runs up to him in Barry's first game. She says to his dad, you better go over and see Barry because he's already scored 3 touchdowns and no one can tackle him or touch him.
His
dad's like, what are you talking about? She says, you better go watch Barry, not these 2 guys. You better go watch Barry. And he goes back over and that's when he does it. And the legend of Barry Sanders begins.
Look up his punt and kick return numbers at Oklahoma State as well. You can look up the rushing yards, which are otherworldly, but look up what he did all around. I mean, he had one of the great years in the history of college football, maybe the greatest. And he went on to be, if you put his YouTube highlights, Michael, on 10 years ago or 50 years into the future, he'll always look different than everybody else.
I think the one thing about doing this book that has really been educational for me is that great players always make you feel they were underutilized. For example, Barry Sanders. No one realizes he averaged almost 9 yards, over 8 yards a catch in his career. No one realizes how well he caught the football. No one realizes how much he could have been utilized as a weapon in the passing game. I mean, you know, when he started his career, the one-back set was really becoming in vogue. Joe Gibbs brought that to football. Joe Gibbs' one-back set was three receivers, one back. Lindy Infante, around the same time, created a one-back set out of two-back formation, 2H wide, 2F wide, which meant the F would go out wide, or the H, the halfback, would go out wide, and now you're in a three-receiver set, and you're trying to throw the ball. And so that was really, if Barry would have had another guy interchangeable, then all of a sudden he could have really been dynamic in the past. Like Barry Sanders is a slot receiver and nickel. Oh my, who's going to cover him?
He couldn't tackle him. He literally broke ankles. And when I say literally, he did. Rod Woodson. Think about what happened with Rod Woodson. He broke his ankles.
He did exactly what, to me, the reason why the Tudor game is so important to Barry Sanders' story is because he ended up becoming that electronic guy on the board.
That's
you never
hilarious.
Knew where he was going to go.
Yeah, no, that's a
you,
great.
You never knew where he was going to go. And so that, to me, is the compelling story. And that's why I was talking about the Silverdome.
He'd lose 3 yards, lose 5 yards, and pop one for 80. That's what he did every single right. game.
Yeah, you know, and I think what, too,
he's an artist.
Fans, he was an artiste. And what fans don't realize is the best part about Barry was he didn't need a lead blocker. A lead blocker would have only messed him up because he could get to the hole and make somebody miss without a blocker. And if you would have put another guy, he's a little bit, this is why basketball and football are so similar, because with Barry needed spacing. If you crowded the court with Barry, it would have limited his effectiveness and you would have been able to kind of gang tackle him. With spacing, with the court open, with 3-point shooters around him, all of a sudden it gave him more room.
I brought up Kuiper. We have about a minute, so I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I brought up Kuiper because of the influence. I wonder, do front offices read these mocks? Are they constantly on Twitter? So they're constantly, not necessarily influenced, but they know everything, right?
So what you do now is, because of the algorithms that you can write, and you've got a lot of smart people that can write code, is you take all these in. You take them all in, okay? And you throw them all in, and you don't weight any of them, because Mel's no more right than the guy in Des Moines. Okay, just fact. Either is Kuiper, either is McShay, any of these guys,
right.
The Tony Pallad, whatever that guy's name is. You know, they're not accurate because they don't have, nobody has sources on all 32 teams, including me. And so, you know, what you do is you take all these names in, you throw them in a hat, and you figure out what the range is of the top 100 players. And so you're sitting there saying, okay, this player's range based on all these mocks is somewhere between 20 and 35. I got it. Now, what happens is sometimes the player's not even mentioned. We were thinking about Mitch Morse in the second round when I was in New England. He was never on anybody's mock draft in the top two rounds. He ends up going to Kansas City. So you've got to be careful.
So gather all the information, even if it's ridiculous, but you want to make sure that you have all the information that's being talked about because you want to be on top of it. Makes sense.
Right, because you're hearing those names, right? Those names are in conversation.
Gotcha.
And so when somebody calls you on the phone and says, who are you guys going to take? You always give them the name that everybody's giving you.
We're back. Lombardi Line.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, Oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, of course, VSiN is all in for the draft next week here in fabulous Las Vegas. We're going to have, coming up tonight, actually, a draft preview special with Tim Murray and Sean King breaking down all the first-round prospects and props. Expert guests include legendary broadcaster Brent Musburger, former NFL GM Michael Lombardi, and former NFL lineman TV host Mike Golic and his son. VSiN's draft preview special tonight, 6 p.m. exclusively on VSiN. And don't forget to download the draft betting guide, which is awesome, for $10 right now at VSiN.com/draft. That's VSiN.com/draft. Pat Leonard from the Daily News is going to join us, of course. The Kadarius Toney news, we'll get to him coming up in a bit. Will Hill, Thomas Gable, Wes Reynolds. So we are jacked, and we're going to start with our first guest here on the Lombardi Line, John Massa. He's a professional handicapper. And I believe, Michael, you can help me with this to start with, John, as we welcome and say good morning to John. I believe you've cultivated a relationship with John over at the Borgata.
Yeah, through a mutual friend of ours, and John's done a remarkable job. I mean, John's one of these guys that, you know, I talk about the NBA regular season being so challenging, and John has been really, really dead on in being able to handicap a league that I think is almost impossible to handicap based on so many variables that we don't know about or we can control going into a game, and the body language and the flair. So I've been following John. His work has been really good.
As we say, good morning to John Massa. A nice little setup there from Michael Lombardi. Help us, John, because handicapping the NBA can be a gauntlet, right? As we move from the regular season to the postseason, how do you adjust your handicapping?
Well, handicapping is tough anytime, guys. That's why I like to distinguish myself as a handicapper outside of the touts that are out there. I call them touts. A handicapper can make a line on a game, and that's what you need to do to beat the NBA. And in the regular season, as Michael says, it's challenging. It's actually easier in the regular season because, as everybody knows, these teams just do not get up for 82 games. They don't get up. The only guy that got up for every single game, which is what separated him from everybody else in the world, was Michael Jordan. The teams just don't get up for 82 games. And now, in this era, with resting guys has become like, you know, that's the norm now instead of guys going out to play all 82. So you can pick and choose your spot. So there's so many spots. There's schedule games. One team's playing back-to-back, right, fourth and sixth on a West Coast trip. The other team's rested. So there's just spots, revenge spots. One team wallops a team by 30. You know, the guys don't want to get embarrassed. They're coming back with that game the next time. So there's more spots. When you come into playoffs, every player, each team, is coming 100% every game. So the lines get tougher in playoff time, and that's why you see less movement on the line. As Michael was following me, and he can tell you, if I tell you in the morning, bet a game minus two, that game is four by tip-off. Or take plus seven, that game is five by tip-off. Not so much in the playoffs, unless there's a big injury or something happening.
What is your strategy now as you look and you adjust as it becomes harder when you see, you know, like we see these 2-0 games and, you know, last night Brooklyn, you know, thinking I thought they would really show at least some resolve and they even played Blake Griffin.
But did everybody.
Were you on that too?
Yeah, I was. I was on the Celtics plus four. Look, just if you guys go to my website, howtobeatthebookie.com, I write previews on every game, even the games I don't bet. In that game, what I wrote, first of all, you had Robert Williams coming back. A big defensive piece for them. Obviously, it was his first game back after almost a month with the meniscus, so they eased him back in, but he gave them a little help. Look, Boston, the best defensive team in the league. They've absolutely shut down Kyrie and KD. They're frustrating them. They're just telling them somebody else is going to beat us. They held up to 16 points apiece yesterday again. I've got the Celtics right now as the best team in the NBA, challenged only right now by Golden State. You got to realize, Milwaukee doesn't have Middleton. Phoenix doesn't have Booker. Those are the only other two teams that I put in that elite class. Celtics are just doing a great job right now. The line on the game, again, this is why I say I'm a handicapper. The line on that game deserves to be picked. Not 4 points. When that line went for just the wrong line. Now, like you said, in a must game like that, Brooklyn could have went and crushed them outright. Brooklyn just has been horrible all year long at home. 2-9 against the spread their last 11 games in Brooklyn. So I love the Celtics last night.
Let's get to a couple of your caps today. We'll start with the early one, the Bucks. You just mentioned the four. They've ticked up to 4.5. They blew out the Bulls, John, on Friday, of course. So you've got 4.5 with the Bucks laying it at Chicago. What do you got here?
They did it without Middleton. They said, no Middleton, I wrote, no problem. Bucks absolutely own this series. They beat them 18 of the last 20 meetings. 18 of the last 20. All four meetings in the regular season this year by a combined 59 points. So after Chicago stole the game at Milwaukee in game two, Milwaukee came, and like I said, even without Middleton, poured it on. And I'm a big matchup guy. When some teams just own the other team. And it's always that way, like I said, especially in basketball. Look, the matchups just favor Milwaukee here. It's Milwaukee and nobody, and I just can't see the Bulls getting it done. They're holding the Bulls to 93 points per game right now, the lowest in the playoffs by far.
What did you set this line at, John?
This line, to me, is only 4. But again, with the trend, I could not bet the Bulls in this game. I don't want the Bulls in this game. So sometimes I'll just X out a team. I don't want to buck the trend. But look, the line makers, they're sharp also. They know everybody's going to want to be on Milwaukee, so they set this number a little high. As they did yesterday, knew everybody would bet the Nets in the obvious must-win situation, and they just set it extra high. This game couldn't take the Bulls. I would need like a big fat 6 to take the Bulls in this spot. Other than that, I leave this game alone. I get better spots. Again, you know, I tell my guys all the time, be patient. You know, we don't have to bet every game. If you want to bet every game, there's plenty of touts out there that'll put you on 8, 10, 12 games a day. You're not going to be successful gambling like that.
John Massa, professional handicapper. Okay, how about this spot? The Warriors closed, 2 in Denver, game 3. They're sitting 4 on the board. Is the number going the right way there, John?
Going even higher. It's 4.5 now, and it absolutely is. Golden State, you know, it almost looks like Steph Curry getting injured at the end of the year was a blessing in disguise. He's coming off the bench now fresh. Jordan Poole has now shown what he can do. This team is lethal. The spacing that's created on the floor with Thompson, Curry, and Poole is insane. They're averaging 122 on 54% shooting, hitting an average of 17 threes a game in this three-game set. Golden State, like I said, right now, I don't think there's any doubt. They're the best team in the West with Phoenix minus Booker.
And then where are you with Phoenix as they go?
Guys. I'm sorry. Go ahead, buddy.
Where are you with Phoenix today against New Orleans?
That's my one spot. I like New Orleans in this game. These teams have played 10 times in the last 2 years. Phoenix has won 7 of the 10. The only game that hasn't been decided by double digits was the last game. Now, like I've mentioned a couple of times, you got Booker's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. CP3 is averaging 25 points per game on 54% shooting and 12.5 assists a game so far in the series. He's going to have to maintain that. Now, they can get some scoring from Ayton. They can get some scoring off the bench from Cam Johnson. But there's no replacing Booker unless CP3 keeps it up. Pelicans got a nice little big three with McCollum, Ingram, and Valanciunas. And I think this game, they come back and they get this one against the Suns outright.
Atlanta's been unbeatable at home. Miami's laying a point and a half. You have a lean there, John?
I do, and it's to the Hawks. Just waiting for confirmation on that game. Got a couple of question marks. Kyle Lowry.
We're going to go ahead and throw John on hold.
We got another voice.
We're having a connectivity issues there with John, but awesome information, and he's 100% right, Michael. There are questions about Kyle Lowry. My assumption, that hamstring, you know, it's interesting. He gives him 7.5 dimes as well. My assumption is he's not going to play because the doctor said he can't go back in game three. It'd be a quick turnaround for a guy that vet status with that build to come back so quickly from that hammy, don't you think?
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's impossible. I mean, you know, it's such a turnaround. I don't think he can get loosened up. And then you're going to be concerned that he's going to pull it even more. You know, when he left the game, you could see it. It's like Van Fleet yesterday. When he left that game, you knew he was in trouble. And so, you know, I think it would be really hard. It would be more damaging going down the road. So I think they got to try to find a way to win this game. Look, they can win this game without Lowry. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Sounds like John likes the Pelicans today was his play in the spot that he liked the best. John Massa, thank you very much. Pat Leonard, Daily News, joining us next here at Lombardi Line on a Sunday.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, top horse racing plays from ExpressBet editor-in-chief Jeremy Plonk, both from Keeneland today. Race two, Jeremy likes the six horse. T Winnow pass at a juicy 8-1 on the morning line. He likes the nine at Keeneland. He likes the two horse. Petrichor on top at 5-1. You can bet these races and more using FirstBet, the preferred horse betting app of VSiN. Sign up today, FirstBet app. Again, this is a great promotion. Promo code Vegas22 and bet at least $25 on the Kentucky Derby. You're going to receive $25 in free bets to use on the Preakness and $25 on the Belmont. Go to VSiN.com/horses for details. That's VSiN.com/horses. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher here in Vegas. Pat Leonard, decade plus at the Daily News. I've interviewed Pat a bunch. He does a great job. Covers the Giants on the beat there for the news. And we say good morning to Pat Leonard. As we say hi, how about this? Another regime change there, Pat. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. What's the early return on the energy from these two as far as organizing the Giants?
Hey, Patrick. Yeah, glad to be on. It's obviously rainbows and sunshine right now. They don't have any losses. They have two first-round picks, and they didn't have anything to put into that and a place to be. When ownership is giving you a long runway, we'll see how long that runway is from Giants ownership, depending on how 2022 goes. Game so far, early returns are on the phone a lot. That's what he needs to be. That's a positive development. Obviously, Howie Roseman to that second first-round pick in 2023. We'll see how that shakes out. Brian Daboll still waiting see mode on there. I think he'll definitely improve their offense. Still waiting, as I think everyone is, what kind of head coach, game day coach he's going to be. The vibes are high, but they're coming off a coaching staff that really was told, you know, Giants ownership wanted more structure. They wanted something to be tighter there.
Here's what we're going to do. I don't want to miss a word. Pull him down, Kev. Here's what we're going to do. Let's have him on the next break, and we'll push Will back a break. And because I want to make sure, because it sounded like good news, Michael. So I want to, because when you start, I know you know this better than anybody. When you're starting fresh at GM, and a lot of it comes down to instilling that culture at head coach and GM. Yeah. So we're going to get him on the phone where it's clear. So you and I are going to carry it from here, and we'll get him on the next segment. I'll ask you the same question. Are you hearing any early returns? Daboll seems to have good energy. I don't know anything about Shane. What's your take on those two?
Well, I think he's in a really tough spot. I mean, when you walk in and you get flown into a team that hasn't been very good and haven't been able to win very many games over the last, the last five seasons, I think they're the worst winning percentage other than Jacksonville in the last 5 years. I mean, look at it. The last time, you know, since 2017, their win totals 3-5, 4-6, and 4. I mean, and yet, you know, I mean, and they fired McAdoo. They gave Shermer 2 years. They gave Judge 2 years. So you're sitting there as a general manager, you know, trying to clean up Dave Gettleman's mess and the mess of their organization based on some of these ridiculous salaries that they've given out, you know, and whether it's Bradbury, Adoree Jackson, it really doesn't matter. And so I think the challenge is there. I think Don Martindale will do a good job defensively. He's got to change some things. They got to get better players. And this is a draft where I think he could utilize those two picks and get two starters that he can come in and start building a better foundation. Because right now the foundation isn't very good. You know, it's just not there. They don't have anything you could say, well, here's their strength, right? Here's where they're really good. As you've said many times, I mean, look, they sign players that, you know, everybody else knows in the league aren't great, but yet they seem to think that they can get, they overpay for them. And I think that's ultimately what they do, and they don't get enough protection. And then it comes right back to the quarterback. How yeah. good is he? You know, and I don't really know. Like, I think he's one of those guys that you say to yourself, yeah, he's good. He's a hard worker. He'll do everything. But how competitive is he? And then you look, you got, you know, Galladay's out there. He's making a ton of money. Is he going to be a number one receiver? I don't think so. Barkley's in his last year. There's a lot of question marks.
Michael, you nailed it. With Daniel Jones, there are times he's enticing, right? You almost hate to have a player like that that flashes and then goes quiet. Because yeah. it's almost like dealing with a human being that's one day good mood, next day bad. You know, you never know what you're getting. It's with Daniel Jones, especially with the athleticism that we didn't know coming out of Duke. I mean, he's really has a skill set.
But there's something missing. You know, he doesn't play fast. When the game heats up, he doesn't play fast. And look, I think they're doing the smart thing. Daboll's offense to see if he can be adaptable to Daniel Jones. There was a lot of conversation that they may go after Trubisky. I never really bought that because I do think the Giants, John Mara is all in, and Chris Mara, the owners, are all in on Daniel Jones. I mean, he's their guy. They want to have it. They want this problem. But when you sign Tyrod Taylor as the backup, you're saying, look, there's going to be a short leash. They bring Davis Webb back. Davis Webb's a fascinating guy because Davis Webb was the guy they drafted. They actually liked more than Patrick Mahomes. I mean, wow. In that draft that McAdoo was in, they really liked Davis Webb. They loved him. They picked him in the third round. So, you know, they bring him back because they probably felt like he wasn't getting coached well enough. So their evaluations are never wrong. But the line is not good. They signed Feliciano as their center from Buffalo. He was their weak link in Buffalo. No denying that. Garcia from Arizona. Andrew Thomas has been very disappointing. And then who's going to be the right tackle? To me, they're going to be sitting there looking at a legitimately good tackle. Whether it's Neal, whether it's Cross, whether it's the kid from North Carolina State. They can't go wrong with any one of those three. And to me, that's the strength of the draft. And they've got two picks that they absolutely have to pick. If they can pick an offensive lineman and a corner, which then allows them to dump the salary of Bradbury and they can move on from him, I think that would. Or they take a defensive lineman. I mean, look, you know, they've got a lot of money tied up in Leonard Williams, but they don't have any pass rushers. I mean, they don't have anybody who put their hand down the dirt and say, okay, let's go.
It was an abrupt ending to the Joe Judge era. 2 years.
They had to have it. It got strange at the end. There's no denying it. I mean, it got really weird.
Remember that speech he gave, like 10-minute rambling speech?
After the Chicago game, yeah.
It was weird.
I mean, look, Joe could never get the offense fixed. He hires Jason Garrett at the request of the Giants. I mean, that was all the Mara family wanted. They wanted Jason Garrett. They thought Jason Garrett was really a great offensive mind, and he could help the quarterback. And I wrote a column, you know, about that relationship was going to break because there was no way it was going to work. Garrett wasn't going to do enough to help the player, and the player wasn't going to do enough to help Garrett. So it was going to fall short. This one, Jones is on a short leash. He's on a very short leash. But this team around them, you know, it'll be interesting what Vinny posts as the totals for this team is. I don't know what their strengths are. You know, I don't know really where they're going to be very good. I think they'll be better coached, don't get me wrong, in terms of offensively and defense. I mean, Pat Graham did as good a job as you can do as a defense coordinator there last year. If Don Martindale can do half as good, that's going to be remarkable because the talent level isn't good enough.
Well, they've got the 5th and 7th overall pick. They can get better in a hurry with some youngsters. I ask you about Judge because I want you to contrast him to Daboll. You know Daboll well. I know Judge. I know you know them both very well. How would you contrast the two?
Well, they're completely different. I mean, Daboll's specialization is offensive football. So he can walk into an offensive room and he can tell his offensive coordinator, this is what I want. You know, this is what I want to have happen. And this is the vision of the offense I see. Plus, he can walk into the defensive room and tell Martindale, here's what I want. My concern with Joe was Joe could never fix a problem unless it was in the kicking game.
Joe wasn't going to go in and tell Garrett, look, this is terrible. I mean, just look at all the offensive line coaches they went through when he was there. They never could fix a problem. Part of the job of a head coach in the NFL is to fix problems. It's to anticipate problems, but it's also to fix problems. And I just didn't think Joe's background allowed him to do that. And that became a problem. And so, you know, when your head coach can't solve the problems on any part of the ball besides the kicking game, it becomes an issue. And I don't think it's Joe's fault as much as it was Joe needs more experience. Brian has more experience. Now, he's going to have to tie it all together. He's going to become more of the head coach, and he's going to allow his coordinators to run the offense. And so we'll see what happens there. He's, you know, he's got Mike Kafka, who was a huge get for him. Now, there was a lot of conversation that Kafka was the guy that was going to stay in Kansas City when Bieniemy became a head coach. Like, they were really – but Kafka let his contract play out. And Kafka felt like, look, I'm never going to become the coordinator here because I don't know if Bieniemy's ever going to get the head coaching job. And then they had that little debate whether Bieniemy was coming back. He signed a one-year extension. So Kafka's going to have a chance to run his offense with Daboll's vision. And I think that'll be improved, plus offensive line coach. Daboll brought his offensive line coach with him from Buffalo. That's a huge get. They will be better coached offensively.
I have to ask this for our friends at Nesson. We're happy to be back with them. So you just said all that about Daboll and his brilliance offensively, which we've seen. How about, isn't Joe Judge going to be running the offense in New England?
Well, I think, look, let's be real clear here. I think there's one man that runs everything in New England, and he's the great Bill Belichick. And here's what I think Bill is intending to do. I think Bill wants to do, now that Josh left, they have this, basically this New York City Manhattan phone directory when we used to have them, right, of offensive football. And I think Bill's going to come in, and he's going to scale this back, and he's going to allow Joe to kind of run this through him. Nobody ever just goes out on the – Belichick does it. He's not BlackBerry. He's not going to make people walk out on a plank. He's going to coach the coaches. So everything's going to go through him, and they're going to link it all together. And it's going to be the best thing that ever happened to Joe Judge's career. It's going to be the best thing that ever happened to his career. It's going to take some time, but they're going to scale back what they're going to do. They're going to run the things that Mac Jones could do, simplify, get the players to play faster, and correct some of the things. Not that it was Josh's fault, but when you have a coordinator and a head and a quarterback like Brady and McDaniel, you got a lot of volume in your offense.
There it is. Michael Lombardi on the Giants. Pat Leonard on the Giants next here on the Lombardi Line.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, BetMGM swinging for the fences. Register using the code VSIN200, VSIN200. Anybody hits a home run today, you're going to win $200 when you place a $10 moneyline wager. It's a great deal, okay? You got to be 21 years or older. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Again, 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue, but $10 to win 200. Can't beat that. Bonus code VSIN200. Okay, Pat Leonard, who's been a gentleman through the process. We lost him with the connection, but he's back. New York Daily News. He's on the Giants beat. Nobody covers the team better than Pat. And as we welcome Pat back, we were talking about the new regime where you said it's rainbows and butterflies right now, which it always is, Pat. But let me ask you about Shane in particular. It's kind of a cool spot to come in as a general manager. He's got the 5th and 7th overall selections in this forthcoming draft. Do you have an idea of what they're targeting there?
Yeah, well, first of all, what I like best about Joe Shane so far is that he's making calls and taking calls. I mean, that sounds obvious, but, you know, not every general manager is working the phones and pursuing all options and keeping all doors open, as we've seen in New York very recently. And from taking calls on Saquon Barkley to making calls on James Bradbury, Kadarius Toney, and you just asked me about the NFL draft, Shane sounds like he is eager to continue fielding calls on his 5th and 7th picks. I personally think it is likely, if not possible, that he's going to trade back from one of those spots. And I think it's the right move based on where they are in a rebuild, provided, of course, Patrick, that the ownership, John Mara and Steve Tisch, are giving Joe Shane and Brian Daboll the runway that you think they deserve, given where the roster is.
All right, you broke the story, and you did a tremendous job that they're shopping Toney. And you know the story, the backdrop between how Toney became a Giant, that Gettleman was reluctant to trade down. Joe Judge kind of had to talk him into it once the Eagles selected the receiver they intended to pick. And then they made the deal, and they got Toney. Where do you think this ends up, and how do they actually trade Toney with their cap situation being as bad as it is right now?
Right. No, that you hit it right on the head. That's exactly how he became a Giant. You're right. Trading Toney is going to be difficult given the cap situation and also the fact, as you know, Michael, teams know they're not trading him because it has nothing to do with him not being a good player, right? It has to do with other issues that they would inherit. So what could they get in that trade? I think, you know, I know when I broke the news on Friday, this is a fresh action taken by the Giants to do the due diligence on what they could acquire. So it's obviously possible that it comes back to them that between the lack of return anyone's willing to give up and the cap implications that they can't do what they want to do. But they have made very clear to teams around the league that they want to trade him and that they want teams' best offers, right? Shane wants players who do not fit out of the building because he wants a certain foundation to be built. So they're doing their due diligence at the moment. Now that it's out there, you know, to the league that he's available, I would imagine Shane is now taking more calls. And that's why I kind of think, like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen sooner rather than later because the sweepstakes kind of kick up once the word gets out. And we'll see whether they get the appropriate return. But I'll tell you this, Michael, I think the priority here is more getting rid of the player rather than acquiring like a premium asset.
Well, they could certainly use them to move up in the draft or to do something that can kind of get them the value without, he is worth some value. The problem is they're going to lose a lot of cap room when they do that. And you're right. The hardest thing is on the other end of this call is, why are you trading this guy? Like, the only person that I could see having any real intimate knowledge of the kid is Judge. You know, all those coaches who scattered from the Giants, you know, they know what he is, but Judge kind of has a sense of it. And so it's going to take somebody like the Patriots or somebody who was there last year to trade for him, because everybody's going to run for the hills saying, wait a minute, we knew he was a bad guy coming out. This isn't going to work.
No, you're right. Like, and to your point on the cap implications, like if the Giants trade him now, you're eating $5.5 million on this year's cap, where they already have none, just to get rid of the player. Plus, what are you getting as far as a draft pick back? But like you said, maybe you package it in something moving around the board. As far as where he goes, yeah, I would agree. Like, obviously, nobody knows him better than Judge as far as coaches go. I look at the Patriots roster though, and I see, not that they don't need a receiver, but they did put a lot of resources into that position last year. They got guys like Aguilar, Kendrick Bourne, even like a tight end like Jonnu Smith. Is that something they want to take on? You know, it's going to have to do with what Belichick and Judge talk about and how high of a recommendation the coach gets from his new assistant there. You know, I think the Chiefs are always a team that sticks out to me, not only when there's a character maybe flag on a player that Andy Reid feels like he can deal with basically by just putting him in a productive offense and it takes care of itself. They have had no problem in the past with taking on guys that other teams view as unsustainable on their roster. And they're obviously scouring the draft all throughout this process. Tyreek Hill's gone. They're certainly in that market. So they're the team that sticks out to me as somebody not only who is looking for a receiver and also would maybe take on something off the field, like why are you trading this guy, but would also fit in the offense, pre-snap motion, getting in the ball in space, using him almost like as a running back at times. That feels to me like a great fit if they can make it work.
Pat Leonard, New York Daily News. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry, Patrick.
Please.
The thing that added for New England would be if they legitimately thought he could dominate the return game. I mean, if they felt like his punt returns, and he didn't do any of that last year, if his punt returns could change the field, certainly I think they would be, assuming the character's in line.
Pat Leonard, Daily News on the Giants beat, joining us, Lombardi Line. Michael and I were just discussing Daniel Jones. Now, Daboll's task is to develop him. You've covered him on the beat your whole Daniel Jones's career. I want your opinion, Pat. What do you see in Daniel Jones?
I do think he has enough for you to say, like, hey, maybe there's still something here. But I do think some of his trademark flaws are difficult to correct. The one that all has stuck out to me since the beginning is the decision-making in the red zone. Now, that's not easy for any quarterback, obviously, but when the field shrinks and the stakes are higher to get 6 points instead of three, making those quick decisions and also making the decision of when to throw the ball away rather than forcing a throw or holding on to it too long and risking that turnover. Last year he got better with the turnovers and with the fumbles. The problem was they weren't scoring more points. It was at the expense of being more conservative with those decisions. So, and as far as he goes with having a shot this year, the Giants certainly look like they're starting him and giving him a chance in this fourth year here. I don't expect them to pick up his fifth-year option by this May 2nd deadline. But you got to think, look at what they're doing. They're looking to possibly trade Kadarius Toney, who's one of the only real elite talents on the offense, if you want to throw Saquon Barkley in there as well. So how good of a chance does Daniel Jones have, especially if you're getting rid of a guy like Tony? Maybe you have Barkley on the roster and you're going to draft some people, but I think Daniel is a good leader. I think he puts in the work, and I also think he throws a really good ball. But the decision-making, it's tough to overcome. Michael and Patrick, you guys know as anything else. Like, nowadays, if you're not scoring 25, 30 points a game any given week, you're just not going to win games. And so far, Jones hasn't had the best play calling, especially the last 2 years, but he hasn't demonstrated that he can just run up points.
Pat, I know you've spent some time over at the Jets as well. Any thoughts on what they're planning to do with their two first picks?
Well, it's a good question. Listening to Joe Douglas and Joe Shane last week, it sticks out to me that Shane is kind of working the phone. Maybe let's trade back. Let's open for business. Joe Douglas looks like he's ready to make picks at 4-10. And obviously, they're only a year ahead in their new coaching staff, but they're clearly in a different place. They're ready to pick guys that they think can play and contribute right away and help them win games. Now, is it fair to expect them to win the division? No, but is it fair to expect them to start turning a corner and show some productivity? Yes. Douglas has said several times that the lines, offensive and defensive, are what they want to prioritize. He did admit they've already thrown a lot of resources into the offensive line, and frankly sounded to me like he's content with it. I think they're going defensive four personally, whether it's an edge, if it's a Walker or a Thibodeau that falls to them there, maybe even a corner. Stingley, I know, is a name that sticks out for them at four possibly, but wouldn't surprise me if they go defense at four, even though I could easily make the argument you could still draft an offensive lineman to kind of stack up on their roster there. And then 10, probably a wide receiver. Think maybe like a Drake London, I know, from USC. Receiver and either corner or edge. is what I'm going to say for what I get a feel for what the Jets are going to do there.
It was worth the wait, Pat Leonard. Thank you so much. New York Daily News, the Giants beat. You do a great job, man. Thanks for your patience. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
You did a great job. P. Leonard, NYDN on the Giants beat. That Tony piece is fascinating because, as you mentioned, it's going to hit the cap as well. Interesting. Yep. It's a great conversation there with Pat Leonard. We're coming back with our buddy Pat Leonard. We're coming back with our buddy Pat Leonard. We're coming back with our buddy Pat Leonard.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.